Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
From the halls of assembly, you'll hear us scream and shout. Our love of Indiana is manic and devout. Everything I do, we discuss in unique manner. We won't be satisfied until we hang another banner. Us two goofy guys go by names of Ward and Eric. And as you probably know by now, we're Hoosier Hysterics. Hoosier Hysterics. Hoosier Hysterics.
Happy end of the men's basketball season, Ward.
I'm not going to say happy, but I will say it's a relief.
Okay. Happy relief end of the season for men's basketball, Ward?
I mean, you know, I'm about to leave town for quite a while, and I was kind of anxious, like, what if we make it to the Big Ten championship and I can't watch it, and then we win that, and then we have to, you know, try from another country to figure out how to watch the NCAA tournament in the middle of the night. Problem solved.
All right. Before we get into all we need to get into, of course, we have start with...
Sorry, I thought
I was going to lead you into the lead in.
Yeah, no, I thought you had, and then it was my turn because, you know, you say the thing and then I say the thing and then you say the thing and then the thing happens. Yeah, but
we have long since established we're not good at this.
Right. You mean so, podcasting?
I do. So
we are
powered by
CommunityCars.com, sponsor of the pod, Hoosier Hysterics. CommunityCars.com, Hoosier Legends talk with Ward and Eric. CommunityCars.com.
That was my, like, sad, you know, I'm not happy about it.
It was resigned.
It was resigned to what's going on, but... if you're looking for something to get you in a better mood, you go out and get yourself a CommunityCars.com car. And why is that, Ward?
Because Holly, who's sitting there behind you, just had another amazing experience with CommunityCars.com. Community Cars is the place to go, whether your basketball team is great and marching through the madness, or is going to be sitting at home for the rest of the season wondering who will be on their roster next year. Either way, CommunityCars.com is the best way to take care of your transportation needs, no matter what your budget.
Exactly. No matter what your budget, just got another personal testimonial. A guy in the New York, New Jersey area ordered two cars from Community Cars, one for his daughter and one for somebody that works for him. Two very different cars, very different budgets, very different brands, styles. But that's the point. Whatever your, you know, aesthetic needs are and whatever your budgetary needs are, Community Cars will help you. Holly's trolling around town in her brand new Kia Sportage, and she loves it. And so that's all gone very well. So CommunityCars.com, while Indiana has ups and downs, CommunityCars.com will always be there. And before we get into kind of our post-mortem and wrap up, I do want to focus on something really positive.
Great.
Which is the Indiana women's basketball team, Ward, has their selection show tomorrow as well.
Let's go.
All reports are that we're going to get a top four seed, which means hosting a potential two games in Assembly Hall. And after last season, where we stubbed our toe at the end of it against Miami at home with Mackenzie Holmes not at full strength, we'll see if Mackenzie Holmes is at full strength this year. But you know that Mackenzie, more than anyone, wants to end this thing right and give these fans two wins to get us back to the Sweet 16, which would be a remarkable achievement. Making the Sweet 16 is kind of the mark for elite programs to be there consistently. Yep. And if they can get back there this year, they will prove that. So I just hope that Indiana fans, while wallowing in the despair of men's basketball, wraps their arms around this women's team starting right now, getting excited for the selection show tomorrow, finding out who our matchups are, filling out the bracket for the women's team, who can do some damage. They got four women on this team that can shoot the three ball.
This is what I'm saying. It's, in the country. You talk about March Madness and a team getting hot, and this team's kind of been hot most of the season so far as being able to light it up from the outside. And you know, every, let's like put it out there, think about it, pray on it, whatever you do to manifest things that Max Knee's going to be okay. Because if you have her down low and you have four plus people who can fill it up from the outside, on a given night, they can beat anybody in the country, certainly in Assembly Hall. But once you get to the Sweet 16 and beyond, and you're playing these really elite teams, it's like, you know, Sarah Scalia gets it going and forget about it. You know, there's no team in the country that can keep up if we're clicking on all cylinders. And the nice thing is, I think people have really been on the women's train here for several seasons, really independently of the men's team. It's not like, oh, also we should, or let's do this because the men's season is over. Let's go over here. It's like, this is a very, very dedicated, passionate, rowdy fan base for the women's team. And no doubt they are just as excited as they have been the last few seasons. So, you know, but let's say you're not one of those ones with season tickets going to every game. Show up for those two games in Bloomington. You won't regret it.
Sellouts. They need to be sellouts, totally sellouts. And just for a couple stats, we have five women on the team. All five starters average over 10 points a game. But what amazes me even more than that is we have five women on this team that on any night can go get you 20.
Yeah.
Like, think about that luxury, Ward. Like, on the men's side, like, we were struggling to have, like, Khalil and Mac could go get you, or Khalil and Malik could go get you 20. But it was a chore to get there, truthfully. The women legitimately have five people that on any given night, depending on how you want to play them, any one of them can get you 20. And just if I could read these stats.
Please.
3-point field goal percentage. And I would also like to point out, this is all on high volume. All four of these women shoot plenty of threes. These are not small sample sizes. Sarah Scalia shoots 43.2% from three. Yarden Garzon shoots 43.8% from three. Sydney Parrish shoots 39.6% from three. And Chloe Moore McNeil shoots 40.2% from three. That is astounding. It is absolutely astounding to have a team that is basically shooting 40% for the team from three. So I'm super excited to watch them. I'm going to do my damnedest to get to Bloomington for those games. I don't know if I'm going to be able to, but I'm going to try. But if not, I will be pregame in it. I'll be halftime in it on Spaces. We'll be postgame in it. I know you will probably be in Greece for both of those games.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
But it's an exciting time of the year, and I don't want the men's side to over the negativity of the men's side to overshadow the positive stuff that's going on the women's side. So let's get behind that. Now, we do have to talk about the men's program, but before we do, we've got the fourth part in our four-part series with IU Ventures, where we get to highlight Hoosiers doing incredible things with their companies. These are amazing entrepreneurs that are not only doing businesses that stand to make financial gains for all of their investors, but they're also just doing really cool stuff. We've done technology companies that are working on wireless charging. We've been in the healthcare business, and that's what this one is too. And this is a woman who graduated IU around the same time as us, a little younger than us, but has just dedicated her life to helping people, truthfully, and found a way to come up with a company that not only helps people, but also makes money. And she's a Hoosier. So let's roll that piece.
Here comes our guest. Here comes our guest.
Hailing from Indianapolis, Indiana, the South Side, We are talking to a woman who graduated Indiana in 2003 with her degree in sociology. From there, she went to North Carolina, where she got her master's of healthcare administration.
Boo!
She came back to Indiana, where she was with IU Health in various capacities for several years before getting her degree in registered nursing at IU Indianapolis. In 2010 to 2016, she was an RN focused on critical care. In 2016, she founded KB, a company that focused on providing nursing care for the elderly. And in 2020, she is the CEO and co-founder of Primary Record, a company that is focused on creating one secure place to document, discuss, and share medical information when needed most. I can't wait to get into this because I recently, with my girlfriend, went through a horrifying situation with her father, who passed away of dementia, and we had to deal with all that stuff. And Primary Record seems like it would have been the perfect thing to have at our disposal at that time. In February 24, the IU Angel Network, part of IU Ventures, made an announcement that they were making a proud investment in Primary Record, which an early stage healthcare technology company. And IU Ventures was clearly in the camp of helping them on their mission to simplify medical information for families. I also want to say, since 2017, this woman has been volunteering with Dementia Champion, with Dementia Friends Indiana. As I said to her before we started this, she is definitely a better citizen of the world than Ward and I. And for that, we are grateful. It's also not a high bar, but we are grateful, and we welcome to our podcast, Jean Ross.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
So, Jean, thanks for joining us. Let's start where we're all connected. Tell us about your Indiana University experience as an undergrad, why you chose Indiana, and what your life was like at IU as a student.
Oh, those are like good memories. I have a 15-year-old that's starting to look at colleges, and I'm like jealous.
Yeah.
Do you guys ever like, yeah. So
I got a 16-year-old. I'm right there with you.
Uh-huh. And Indiana University was a no-brainer just because, the campus, it was, I was actually I'm one of five. My dad was a factory guy, so we didn't have a lot of money. And so I was a benefactor of a program in Indiana called 21st Century Scholar that allowed me to go to any state school. So I visited a lot of state schools. One was very cement alike, very dorky. And didn't really grasp that one. Uh-huh, and then when I went down south to the beautiful campus of IU, it was I was like, I'll figure out a degree here. So I went to Indiana University. I got on the south side of campus. I was in Reed, which was like apparently music and ballerinas. That's what Reed Hall was all about.
Education.
It was right by the School of Ed. Because where were you guys at your freshman year?
McNutt.
Of course.
Foster.
Ward, you look like a McNutt guy. Yeah. I'm just going to say it.
Yeah. They nailed me on that one for sure.
I was across the street at Foster. But my ex-wife, who I'm still very close with and the mother of my three kids, was at Reed as well. She was an education major. So you might have been there around the same time. Who knows?
Maybe. Was her name Liz? Because I remember my hall being having six Liz's.
No, it was not.
Okay. It's actually in Reed, it's a co-ed dorm. A hallway that would lead to the SRSC. I passed my future husband's dorm room.
So
that is where I met my spouse as well. IU has a lot of good memories. And my time there, I started out as a pre-med because I was a smart science girl, and everyone's like, oh, you're too smart to be a nurse, is what I got told by my guidance counselor. So I was like, oh, I'll go be a doctor. But then I showed up and I freaking hated all of my classes. And I remember calling my dad crying because neither of my parents had gone to college, traditional college. So they had no idea what to do with me. But my dad's like, well, what class do you like? And I said, well, I really like my sociology class. The professor's like so engaging and it's so fascinating learning about humans in that way. So I became a sociology major, and about probably three quarters of the way through, I realized I probably need something else. I don't really know what you do with a sociology major other than become a sociology.
Yeah, you could teach sociology. I think that's what you do with those degrees, right?
No diss to sociology. I mean, they do wonderful work, but
it's kind of like a SPIA major.
Well, and then I failed again, Eric. And so I then went over to School of SPIA, and that's when I took a bunch of there was like a public health certificate. And I met an incredible professor who I knew I wanted to be in healthcare. I just couldn't figure out where. Mm. And he really coached me up and said, you know, you should consider administration. And so that's when he gave me a referral to, he was a graduate of Chapel Hill. So sorry, I had to go to UNC.
You came back. That's all that matters.
I came back. That's what matters, right? And so that led me to go get a master's and then do that work. But my time at Bloomington was incredible. I met my best friend. That's still my friend. She lives in Boston now, but we met they had like a weird dance, you know, the first night you're there in your dorm. I met her that first night and she's been my best friend since. Met my husband. And I was also had lots of opportunities. I'm one of five. So I immediately was trying to figure out how do I stay on IU Bloomington's campus for the whole 4 years. I was one of those annoying freshman orientation people in the summer.
Oh, nice.
But that was a way I could pay my way where I could, you know, they funded your housing. And then, yeah, but we got to, that was pretty inspiring because you get to hear all the parents' questions because they would have a ask a student session. Mm-hmm. And they'd on the stage and the parent could ask you any question. And I remember it was my first foray and making sure the person that asked the question doesn't feel dumb. But this mom raises her hand. She's like, who's going to wake up my son? And we all look at each other on the stage. And I'm like, well, he's going to college.
Right. I would have just responded, you're a dummy. Next.
Yeah, I know. Not how they trained us. Yeah.
So as you go through this magical time in Bloomington, as we all do, but then you did figure out how to get back. Get back from North Carolina. And then it's a long journey, but I think the next kind of crucial step for what we're talking about here, correct me if I'm wrong, is your founding of KB. And I just kind of wonder how that came about, why you decided the world needed that and you were the person to bring that to the world.
Yeah. So coming back, worked a little bit in patient financial services, hated that, and then went to go get my nursing degree and then fell in love with critical care. But spending 6 years in critical care, the question I kept asking myself was why are these 80 plus year olds in the ICU? This is the worst place to be as an older adult. Mm. And so I left the hospital asking the question of how do we make sure that doesn't happen? How can we make sure people stay in their homes and get care? So I had that going on in my mind a lot. And then I had an aunt who actually has 15 children, who had some care that was miscoordinated that resulted in a clot that traveled to her lungs that ultimately took her life. And her name was Kay Beeson. So I, actually founded my company after her, KB. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm going to make sure families have some kind of nurse or something behind them to help make sure that things like that don't happen. So I had no idea what I was doing. I just said, I'm going to be a nurse care coordinator. And daughters somehow found me. They were overwhelmed with what was happening. They knew something was wrong with their, the care that their parents were getting. They just couldn't figure it out. And so I just got really good at, I met a ton of amazing organizations in our community. And then I meet these families. And then my whole job was to go in that home and assess what's going on and just start building a team around that whole family to support them. And it was very instrumental because that was the first time I realized leaving the hospital world, how families don't have access to the information they need to advocate for themselves or to find the right resources. So I had a whole workflow. We'd bring on, a new family. They would trust us because we were nurses. We'd get access to all the patient portals, all the claims data. And I would basically scour that to them and make a report. And that's what I used with all my doctors, the home care, and everybody was loving it. Mm. And it made me realize nobody has the whole story about somebody. And I really thought I was going to solve that with nurses. I actually had 9 contracted and ready to go in February of 2020.
And And then the world got in the way of that, but created a new opportunity.
Right.
That led you to this. So yeah, exactly. Talk to us about how COVID impacted you.
Yeah, so COVID definitely put a halt because we were scared to go visit older adults. Older adults were scared to go to the hospital. So kind of our whole model of how we made our business was not an option. So I told those 9 nurses, I'm so sorry. I'm just going to shut this down. I don't know what's happening. But I just kept talking. I just kept thinking about all of the families that were like, man, this is amazing. And more importantly, how much my doctors and nurses that I interacted with, how much it helped their job when I would have everything organized and ready to go. And so on my cul-de-sac is like Mr. Social. We all have him on our blocks, right? The guy that knows everybody's business, what's going on. I knew he was like into tech. Like I know he did startups and things like that. And so I just walked across the street when it was safe, you know, with a beer in my hand. I was like, Jim McIntosh, like, what can we do to like make this like, because the other piece was I was charging families a lot of money because it was a human being doing that work. I was like, there's got to be a way to make this more available to any family, the things that I was doing. And I also was in a lot of advocacy and policy work. And I knew of a law called the 21st Century Cures Act. And in that law is a thing called patient access. And it means that you today have a right to get the electronic data that's stored about you in those systems. And no one can seem to figure it out. And so I'm pretty stubborn. And so for about 3 years, we've been building kind of the right partnerships to figure out how do we help families take advantage of this new law and start having that one place they can put their health information and not just store it, but then freaking use it to get better care. And so that's been really cool what we've been working on. And we're in the world of AI and all the other fancy words that you hear in technology. But it's been pretty impactful to watch and hear our family stories.
Well, you are in the part of AI that's the good part of AI and not the scary part of AI. So is your product at Primary Record, is it something that consumers, is it a consumer-facing product, or are you working with more companies and what you used to do, critical care companies and middlemen and hospice organizations? How does that work?
We are starting with the family because we got to make it super easy and engaging for them to use. But this year, which was one of the reasons for our fundraising and you know, for IU Ventures and getting involved, is at in my time in doing my nurse care coordination, when I was getting resources to come into that home, they're using Microsoft OneNote. They're on Excel. They're using a binder. And so we are actually in the process of interviewing a ton of those community-based organizations, and we're going to be creating a professional platform that lets them license and work with families to give them a primary record. Families can then onboard and get the information that those organizations need to better serve them. And then when that service is done, the family still owns that data and that primary record. And so that's the piece that we need to get the scalability. But right now, like when you go on our website, we are very much like your family member can start a primary record today and start using it. We have a lot of work to do to, you know, make it better, but we're, that's kind of the plan for this year is how do I make a more connected community so that we can make sure we're getting the best care to our family members.
And once a family has it up and running, then anytime they go seek additional care, whatever comes of that, those records, the prescriptions, whatever's found is added to the primary record. So the database just keeps building.
Correct. So it's interesting. So right now we're connected to some of the larger electronic health records. So if your doctor's office or hospital uses one of the big guys, Cerner, Epic, which is like MyChart, we can get that electronic data. In the instance that we can't, what we've then built into primary record is the ability for families to manually input it or take a picture of that document and then take the words off there and store them in there. And what we can do today is families can, there's a whole permission model where you can invite in your family members to share like in that responsibility around that person you're taking care of. And then as we're working with these community organizations, the idea is you could then invite in that home care, right? So then my dream is when you're starting any kind of service, like, do you use primary record? You know, and then that helps that information flow.
There is a great comedian named Nate Bargatze who, do you know Nate?
He's always on the Instagram reels. So obviously
he's the best. He's got a great bit recently where he talks about his dad, and Nate's about, I think he's like in his 40s, and he talks about his dad, and he says that his dad, you know, is now at the point in his life where he gets about a surgery every 6 weeks or so. That's about like what his dad's life is. And I think this is a universal thing. When you get older, you have more medical issues, and going to doctor's appointments and managing your care becomes a full-time job. And I mentioned this in your intro, but my girlfriend, her father passed away, had dementia for the last many years of his life. And just managing all of that stuff was laborious and overwhelming, truthfully. And you always feel a little helpless because you are pulling a piece of paper from here. And what about this email that we got? So having this literal primary record, which is a great name for the company, which says exactly what it is so helpful. You mentioned it briefly, but talk to us about how IU Ventures came into your life and how they are helping you get to the next step.
So IU Ventures, there's just some wonderful programs happening in Indiana. Like, it's super awesome to be an entrepreneur in the Midwest. I'll tell you that right now. And I was part of this program. My first interaction with IU Ventures was I was in this program called Axis. They mentor new entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And Jason Whitney, who's one of the leads, was one of on my panel to he was there to critique my pitch. And him and I didn't see eye to eye on, initially, because he was like, well, why don't you just do pregnant women? I'm like, I'm doing medically complex people, Jason. Like, pregnant women would need, pregnant women need me for about a year, and then they would never open a primary record again, right? Like, I need to prove this with medically complex. And, you know, we went round and round. So that was the first time he heard about me. And then I met Emily at there was a wonderful life sciences women's breakfast. Again, another awesome thing happening, women coming together around life sciences. And Emily heard my pitch and she's like, why haven't we interacted with you? I'm like, well, because your boss thinks I should be with pregnant women. We didn't see So she's like, so her, and then there's another woman named Kate Ebinger. I call them my hype women. So it's like, because it is, it's tough being a female founder. Like, I try not to, I ignore all those stats about how low we get on the amount of funding they award to female founders. And I just ignore it. But it really takes people like Kate and Emily that see the problem you're solving and know how much it's going to impact other women. And so they're my hype women, and they kept me, I kept them engaged for a couple months. And then Kate's like, you need to come pitch to us. Like, you're at a stage where it's appropriate. So, they opened up their, IU Angels. That was my favorite pitch, such great questions. And then it's just been an amazing community of support, ever since then. But that's kind of how I got into, and just super lucky that I'm an IU grad so that I can access it.
if somebody wants to get involved with what you're doing, whether it be an investor or a family who needs primary record in their life, how can they see what you're doing, reach out to you if appropriate? What's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
I love communicating to I call them my insiders. So anyone that's interested and just wants to keep track what our company is doing, just shoot me an email, jean@primaryrecord.com. I'm pretty accessible, and just say, I just want to keep an eye on what you're doing. I'm in the investment community, or I might have connections for you. Cause in that insider update, I'm sharing, the good, the bad, the ugly, and then I have a lot of ask. And that community is amazing because they're connecting me to resources. If you are interested in Primary Record for your family, you can also go to primaryrecord.com, and there's a little sign up in our corner in our menu. And just know we have a lot we're working on, especially here in the month of April on onboarding, engaging. So it's like the wild, wild west when you download our application off of that. Because I think we ask you one question, so the onboarding is going to get a lot better, and the experience of it is what we're going to be focusing on, because we've been doing so much R&D on AI and making that easier for families to use. So,
well, I am reminded of someone who is near and dear to Ward's heart, a Kurt Vonnegut quote, a fellow Hoosier that, is famous for saying, I don't know what it is about Hoosiers, but wherever you go, there's always a Hoosier doing something important there. And Jean, what you're doing is super important to so many people. You're making their lives easier at a really vulnerable time and emotional time. You're making it financially better for them. That's the part we didn't really get into, but this is helping reduce costs as well by streamlining information. And it is super important work. And it's a pleasure and an honor to talk to a fellow Hoosier who has done so much more with their lives than we have. So
you guys are spreading. It's wonderful what you're doing. Like I listened to a bunch of, like, when you were shining your light on female athletes, that's huge to me. Like that was, I'm now following what you guys are doing. So,
well, we appreciate that, but we really do appreciate your time and we appreciate what you're doing at Primary Record. Again, it's primaryrecord.com, right? For anybody who wants to get more information. If you have a parent, a grandparent, somebody, a friend who's going through something, this tool is just so useful for everyone. So go to primaryrecord.com. Gene, thanks so much for joining us.
Awesome. Thank you, Eric and Ward, for your time.
That was our guest. That was our guest.
All right, Ward. So it's postmortem time. No time like the present. We've had about 12 hours to really take in the impact of that game. So let's do this first. Let's quickly touch on the game, and then let's move off of the game and go to more big picture stuff. But what was your take on the game? I mean, it's such a stupid question to even ask, but what do you want to say about the game?
That we didn't belong on the same floor as Nebraska for the third time this season. That is a team that was better than us, top to bottom, start to finish, three full games this season at their place, at our place, at a neutral place. They're just a far superior team than us in 2023-24.
We played them three times and they blew us out four times.
That's right.
Don't forget that. They did blow us out two times the last time we played them. Look, there's nothing to say about the game. The game was abysmal. Nobody played well. No one. They didn't have any answers for anything Nebraska wanted to do. But what I want to talk about a little bit is I made this point to somebody else I was having a conversation with this morning. This team has an incredible knack for taking bad and making it even worse. And I'm not really talking about the players here. I am talking about Woody getting ejected, because the game was over. It was clearly, you're not getting a technical to like rally your troops. The game was over when he got his first one. And then he was sitting on the bench and just decided he didn't want to be there anymore. Mm-hmm. And the visual of how he left that court looked like he was walking out on the team. I mean, it just was bad. Everybody was sitting down. No one was like holding him back. He wasn't trying to make a show of it to show his players that we're going to come back, that he had their back no matter what, and he was going to fight for them. He said whatever he said. He got the second technical, and he quickly turned and left, and no one said anything to him. No one even looked at him. He just walked, and the cameras followed him. And you know what? Part of being a coach of a program and a leader of men is in good and bad. And this season has been bad. And I think you owe it to the team to be there for them at the end of the game when the final buzzer goes off, to rally them, get them together, get the kids together, say thank you to the ones that aren't going to be there, and to the ones that are coming back saying, remember this feeling. And do it on the court. And you saw a little bit of that. The assistants rallied the team at the end. I don't know what was said. But I want to have it in my mind that the coaches are saying, hey, guys, are you coming back? Remember this feeling. Remember this feeling. Because this feeling should fuel you for the offseason. It should fuel you for what it means to play at Indiana and never wanting to have this feeling again. And throughout this season, when things have gone bad, there have been things said in the press, in press conferences, when he's thrown players under the bus, when, you know, and we'll get into the true fan stuff. We've just taken bad and made it worse. And while that doesn't necessarily equate to wins and losses, it does equate to just having a fan base galvanized and behind you in good times and in bad. And right now, we have a totally fractured fan base. And I want to get into that. But before we do, I think we should just talk about the seniors that we know are gone. And let's start with Anthony Walker. You know, it was a short stay. We met Anthony less than a year ago, Ward. You know, on Zoom, he came on the podcast a couple times. We had conversations with him outside of the podcast, got to know him at the fantasy camp last August. Just one of the great guys that's ever come through the program that we've had the pleasure of getting to know. He is filled with personality. He is present in every conversation. He has the right intentions. He works hard. He wanted to be at Indiana. It didn't work out the way that I'm sure he wanted it to. But I love the kid, and I want nothing but success for the kid. And I'm sad that this is how it ends for him at Indiana. His 1 year at Indiana was not a great experience.
Well, we don't know. He might have had a great time. He seems like a good dude who probably was still getting the most out of the experience. And there were certainly flashes early on in the season. A lot of people were like, oh, who's this kid? This kid was the steal of the portal. But yeah, I think that, like in so many other aspects of this team, the talent we had, the ability we had was not maximized. You know, and we can get into where the blame should be laid for that. But I just can't imagine that anybody who's been in his sphere since he arrived in Bloomington isn't the better for it.
Yeah, he's a really funny guy. I love him. I wish him nothing but the best. Let's talk about Xavier. So we've gotten to know Xavier pretty well for 3+ years now. Lots of appearances on the podcast, lots of conversations outside of the podcast, several fantasy camps where we've gotten to know him. He's had tremendous highs. Let's not kid ourselves. We do not make very nice. We do not make the NCAA tournament in Woody's first year if Xavier Johnson does not do what he did the back third of that year. It does not happen. He led us to those wins. Of course, we had Trace, but Trace can't bring the ball up the court. You know, Trace has to get the ball from somebody. Trace has to be on the receiving end of lob passes. Trace had to be on the receiving end of pick and rolls. And the 1-2 combo of X and Trace is what gave everybody so much hope for year two of the Woody era. X played, that was the best we saw X play over a stretch of time. Outside of that, it was a total mixed bag on the court. And off the court, it was a mixed bag for X. And some of the stuff was really disappointing, but I'm not going to say unforgivable. You know, I've heard some people go that far. Like, the guy's a kid. He had to grow up while he was at Indiana, and there were times where he did not, and he did not show leadership. And we could talk about the Northwestern incident. We can talk about the several flagrant fouls, knocking the guy in the crotch, getting, you know, arrested on the speeding 90 miles an hour in Bloomington, and then trying to evade the arrest. None of that was good, and none of it's excusable. But I like him. I like X personally, and I wanted nothing but the best for him. And the guy played he tries. He did. At times it didn't look like it because he gets so emotional and in his own head, but I like the kid. I didn't love the player. And I don't think he led to as many wins as he could have. And sure, injuries had something to do with it. But it's been a real mixed bag for X in his 3 years, really just 2 years of playing, not even two full years of playing. And I want nothing but the best for him. And I hope that he's able to use the experience at Indiana to grow as a human, because you're now going to venture out into the world where you got to take care of yourself. There's not going to be the people that take care of you and help you out of jams the way that there were at Indiana University. And we know there's a lot of people that help you out of jams at Indiana. That all goes away now. And he's got to make a living, and he's got to provide for himself, and hopefully one day he has a family and provides for them. And some of this shit that got in his way is going to cause him real problems in life if he doesn't get them figured out. And I'm just rooting like hell for him as a person.
I think you made an important distinction between the person and the player, and I certainly agree with you there. As Indiana fans, I think it's difficult in this day and age of podcasts and social media where there is more of an intimacy with these players. You can get to know them more personally than just what you see on the court or in the press conference. And it's sort of a difficult line to walk where we want Indiana University to be an elite college basketball program, and we want to do it the right way. Clearly, that is something we hang on to desperately. Even when decades go by and we're not very good on the basketball court, we'd like to think we're a cut above just with the integrity and character of our players. And I will say, for the most part, most players through most of these coaches over the last 20+ years have been really, really good people on and apparently off the court, you know. And with X, it's tough because I think he fell short of expectations in both areas. I'm sure he felt that way himself. And when you're injured so much, I think it's like if he had been able to play three straight years without any real injury issues, who knows what kind of player, even what kind of person maybe you evolve into. But we know from talking from so many players over the decades that it is a tough and lonely road when you're injured and you're out and your team is really depending on you to be a leader. So I think there's just a lot of what ifs with X's career that is sadly now over. But look, man, we were 5-0 up until yesterday when X came back from that injury. And you kind of shake your head and you're skeptical about it.
Well, we weren't 5-0 with him back from the injury. We lost a game that he had come back for.
We were playing our best basketball of the season over a stretch, and clearly he wasn't playing great all the time in all those games, sometimes much the opposite, but you know, especially on the defensive end, the energy, and yeah, you know, there's some histrionics, there's some theatrics for sure, which, you know, hey, I like, that's the kind of stuff I did, but there's a reason I never got off of the JVB team. So yeah, I love the guy, he's my coach, he'll always be my coach. And it's scary to think of what we have coming in, which is nobody at the point guard position right now. And God bless Gabe. He definitely showed some shooting, some scoring ability here later in the season that hopefully can really be brought out. But it's scary to think about what that backcourt may or may not be next year.
All right. So now let's just talk about the team as a whole. You and I talked about this before the year. What is success for Indiana and what is failure? And we both agreed that failure is not making the NCAA tournament, period. It doesn't matter how close, bubble or not. If we don't make the NCAA tournament with 3 5 stars on the team, with a fifth year, you know, fourth year Trey Galloway starting with Xavier, which obviously had to deal with his injuries, but Malik in his second year, Khalil in his second year, it was a failure. This year was an absolute failure of Indiana basketball.
100%. And if anybody says it's not, they're wrong. They're objectively wrong.
I couldn't agree more. And I just want to drive home the point on how bad this season was. Just some stats. Right now, we are 98th in the net. We are 92nd in KenPom. We are 82nd in Bartorvik. Those could change a little bit because teams are still playing. Versus top 50 teams ranked in Bartorvik, we were 4-11 this year. This is our worst ranked team by Bartorvik since 2011. The Crean terrible years. We had 9 losses by double digits. 9 of the 14 losses by double digits. And a couple more by 9 points. We had losses of 28, 27, 21, 20, 20, 16, 15. Against teams better than 500 in the Big Ten, we were 1-8. Let me say that one again. Against teams better than 500 in the Big Ten, we were 1-8, and the only one win was a barely win victory against Wisconsin at home when Wisconsin was in the throes of their worst play of the year. Against teams 500 or worse, we were 10-3 in the Big Ten.
We were the best of the worst and the worst of the best.
Yes. I looked at our last 10 games because everybody was going nuts about the 5-game win streak. Okay. Well, you could just look at the 5-game win streak and go, oh, how are we play during that? But let's look at the last 10 games. In the last 10 games of the season, we were 5-5. And our offense ranked in that stretch 124th in the country. Now, this is an offense that was supposed to be better this year. This was an offense that was supposed to be more modern, more outside in, because that's what we were told by the coaching staff leading into the season. We had a tremendous player in Khalil Ware who could do it from everywhere. We had a tremendous post presence in Malik Renew, who very few people could stop in the post. The only person who could really stop Malik was himself with fouls, and I want to get into that too. This team did not play well yes, they beat five teams in a row. I would argue, you're right, they were, that was the best basketball they played in the year. I would not say we played great during that time. We played a lot of bad teams, three terrible teams during that stretch, and two teams that were playing awful, and we played them at home. But you can only win the games that are in front of you, and we won those five. And I want to point this out. In the Woody era versus these bellwethers of the Big Ten, Nebraska, Rutgers, Penn State, and Northwestern, Woody is 6-16. 6-16 versus those four teams.
I think, this look, I'm not defending this at all, but this is a different Northwestern and a different Nebraska, right? Like, you're looking like Hoiberg's kind of got them rolling now. And Chris
this
Collins.
Year.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's been an upward trajectory. He's been building this. And yes, like to me, you could even look at it at the game yesterday where you see like, okay, he came in. It took him like really 3 years to get it going. And now when you look at the style of the play, the way they play, maybe the talent they're getting in and that what he's doing there is going to continue to appeal to more talent than has been able to get to Lincoln before. Chris Collins obviously is doing things that are kind of unprecedented at Northwestern. That all being said, we're Indiana University, and even if Michigan and Ohio State and Indiana are down and Nebraska and Northwestern are up, that's not okay with us. I mean, look, right. It's okay it's that Michigan and Ohio State suck. We're fine with that. But it is not okay that those teams you just mentioned are just boat racing us seasons on end.
Nebraska has won 13 games in the Big Ten. I'm counting the game yesterday. So not just regular season, but the conference tournament too. They've won 13. 23% of those are against Indiana. Okay. I mean, yes, they've been on an upward trajectory. They were a terrible team last year that didn't sniff the NCAA tournament. They're bad. We're 6-16 against those four teams. I think if you add up the number of NCAA tournament wins amongst those four teams for the 3 years, I think the answer is 2. And we're 6-16. So by all stretches, by all accounts, it was a disaster and a failure of a season. And that's on the coaching staff, period.
Well,
I'm sorry. And the buck stops with the coaching staff. They assembled this team.
You can't ignore getting just waxed by Purdue, right? Like, sorry, that, you know, with Kentucky not back into the equation yet, that's the
that
team.
Matters.
It gets coaches at Ohio State and Michigan fired. You know what I mean? And it's great that it's just wonderful that the only program playing as well as Purdue right now is Houston. And okay, maybe UConn. But I'm just talking about the nightmare scenario of Kelvin Sampson and the Purdue Boilermakers vying back and forth between the best team in the country. It's every Hoosier's worst nightmare, but you compound it by losing to them in back-to-back games by over 30 points for the first time since the 30s. You know, throughout our lives, it didn't really matter which team was up and which team was down. You almost always got up for that game, and very rarely are those games blowouts in either direction from either program. And I think it just says something to you. You mentioned how many of these games were by double digits. And anytime we were on the court with a halfway decent team, and look, I know Dickinson's hurt, but Kansas was the one team we could say this season that we held our head high against, even though it was at home. But clearly Kansas is not the normal Kansas, and all the other teams we played that were decent or good just ran us out of the gym.
Yeah. When you look at, you know, they split the quads into 1A and 1B, like the real good teams, real good quad one wins. We're an ofer against those, an ofer. And this is not just this year. It's last year against Arizona. It's last year against St. Mary's. It's two years ago against St. Mary's. It's last year against Miami. It's
Kansas.
Last year against Kansas. It's this year against UConn and Auburn.
Yeah.
Against the best teams outside of the Purdue wins that we had last year with Trace and Jalen, we have been miserable. We have been, to quote you, look like we didn't belong on the court. with many of them. And that is what has upset Indiana fans, I think, more than anything. It's not just the losses. Of course it's the losses. But the way you lose does matter. Like, are you fighting? Are you competing? Did the ball just not bounce your way? Did we not figure out how to, you know, we're a terrible free throw shooting team. Okay, we know that. We're a terrible free throw shooting team, except for yesterday, by the way, where we made every free throw we took. But we're a terrible free throw shooting team. But does that matter when you lose by 28? Does that matter when you lose by 20? No, it doesn't. And again, I go back to it is on the coaching staff. Yes, the players can do more. The players can make better decisions. The players should have shot better. But it all snowballs. It's all fruit from a poisonous tree. If the staff doesn't assemble the correct team, if they don't put together a roster that has the pieces that fit together, that play a style that puts the players in the best position to succeed, then you start getting failure. And when you start getting failure, it does feed on itself. And just like good shooting is contagious, so is bad shooting, you know, and losses are contagious. And I do give the staff credit for they could have packed it in this year. When we lost those four in a row and were 6-10 in the conference with four games left to play, they could have easily packed it in. And this staff did not allow our guys to pack it in, and we won five in a row, and they deserve credit for that. But it does not change the fact that the season was a disaster and a failure, and it was largely because the coaching staff didn't do a good enough job. And this is what pisses me off when I hear in the press conference yesterday, Woody basically saying that the inside-out strategy worked all year. We just didn't hit enough shots.
Nothing worked. You ended up being the 100th best or, you know, worst team in the country. It didn't work. Okay, I want to give some shine on some individuals who had really good seasons. Khalil Ware came in and was the best possible replacement for Trayce Jackson-Davis you could humanly hope for. This kid came in, and a credit to him, the people around him, and the coaching staff and his teammates who embraced him. You know, certainly, like, he couldn't have done what he did without Malik, without Trey. You know, that this was a group effort led by the young man himself, and props to Coach Woodson for really getting him to play like the five-star stud he was touted to be before he went to Oregon. Shout out to Mackenzie Mbako, who after a rough start with an incident at Taco Bell, turned the season around.
It sounded like a radio DJ host there. At Taco Bell.
At Mbako Bell. And it was, really nice to see his progression throughout the season, to go from a guy really struggling in the college game to find his footing to becoming our best shooting threat beyond the 6 feet inside the paint. And he became co-Big Ten Freshman of the Year. And Malik, for all his struggles, especially down the stretch, especially with fouls, still made a huge leap from his freshman year. Trey did some really great stuff playing out of position for most of the year. So you
and then found something at the end of the year, I would say, as a facilitator that he had 100% not had before. Like, now, he was a high turnover guy at the end of the year, too. But yeah, he had a couple games of double-digit assists.
Besides the free throws, you couldn't really ask for much more for Trey with his abilities.
32% free three-point shooting would have been all right, as opposed to 26%.
But it's just like it's never been his game. And we know it got better and pretty darn good last year on low usage. But his usage across the board, having to do everything on both ends this year, I think that's, again, that's more on the staff and the roster construction and the style of play. You can't – Trey Galloway left his heart and soul and blood and knee on the court this year. So I think, like, shout out to all those guys. Gabe coming
in. And shout out to Anthony Leal. Let's give a shout out to Anthony Leal, who for 4 years has not played. And amen. Then when called upon, he wins us the game against Iowa, hitting that giant three. He has big moments in several games. He wins us the game against Penn State in the
Clutch.
Big Ten tournament.
Yeah.
Like, he gives it everything he has too. But what I want to go back to is, I agree with you. You have to give the coaches credit for that. But Ward, something is seriously wrong if I tell you that you have Khalil Ware, who goes from a guy who
this is my point. is that you have all these individuals making strides, like really being impressive, getting accolades, end of the year accolades. And you look at it, that's 3 5-stars on the court. And you've got Anthony Leal, who I think, you know, some people on the inside would have said he should have been playing a lot more sooner. Maybe. Okay. And then you have Trey doing what he did up to the injury. You have Gabe coming in and, you know, not turning it over at least. And it's like, why with all that talent, with all that improvement, were we terrible? Why were we the 100th best team in the country this year? When arguably I'd say a strong argument to say every time we went out on the court against a Big Ten opponent, we had more talent.
Yeah, or at least as much as, right? So, like, then you would hope that the games fall in the balance. But, yeah, that something isn't working. And it wasn't good enough last year. It wasn't good enough the year before. Yes, we made the tournament, but that's not the bar for success at Indiana, and I don't care how many times we missed it before. And also, comparing it to Archie and comparing it to Crean, it's just not fair because of NIL and transfer portal. Those two things combined didn't exist with Archie or Crean. And the resources that Indiana has, there is no reason why Indiana could not have assembled a team where the whole was greater than the sum of the parts. And it was not this year. The whole was much less than the sum of the parts. And that, it has to be on the coaching. I mean, I'm sorry. It just, where else are you supposed to turn? In college basketball especially, and I would say college football too, I think professional sports are a little different, truthfully, where I think you can have an average coach and still have a really good team because the talent is just so good. But in college sports, if you have a really good coach, they win everywhere. Will Wade, for all of his sliminess, wins 30 games at McNeese State. You know, Chris Beard is on the bubble of the NCAA tournament at Ole Miss in his first year. You know, like, the good coaches win wherever they go. It is about the coach. And that's why I do want to talk about, in the vein of this, you know, making bad worse, this was as dark of a fan experience, I think, for an Indiana fan, for most Indiana fans, as has been, when not from just a single fan's perspective, but take a step back, the discourse online, message boards, social media, just talking to people. It's as dark as it has been since the end of the Sampson era, where it just was falling apart and we didn't know what we were going to have. And while I don't think Woody is to blame for that, although he's got to shoulder some of the responsibility, he certainly fans the flames. He fanned the flames by not taking accountability early on in the season. He fanned the flames by, when he did take accountability, out of one side of his mouth, he said, I'm not the kind of coach that points the finger at players. I always pointed at myself, even though I'm not the one missing wide open threes and free throws. Well, that's not taking accountability, my friend. That is not taking accountability. That is trying to have it both ways. And that doesn't work to galvanize a fan base. And then at its most raw, where you have a 10-day stretch where, or a 2-week stretch where Indiana starts winning a few games, Indiana leaks in a really surreptitious, weird way that he's coming back for next season, but no vote of confidence vocally from the athletic director, just a anonymous athletic department source leaking it to the Indianapolis Star and to Pigs and to other reporters 2 hours before a game. That was weird. And the day after, the only recruit from the class who fills every hole that we need to fill decommits. And then we win a couple more games. And senior day comes around, which Brian Evans affectionately refers to now as junior day, since two guys spoke that are not leaving the program. They announce they're coming back. They give a vote of confidence to the coach. And the coach had an opportunity at that moment to galvanize the fan base. He could have, making $4.5 million a year, being the highest paid state employee in all of Indiana, being probably the most visible person in the state of Indiana, or at least one of them, top three, for the most prized asset of Indiana University, a nationally relevant program from a fan perspective. He had a chance to grab that mic and speak to the fans and basically own the season and ask for the fans' chance to earn their support back, the ones that are very pessimistic right now. Some of them you'll never earn back. I get that. But he had a chance to galvanize them. And instead, he took a wedge and put it into that crevasse and just hammered it home and made it as distinct as possible. You either support me unquestioningly because I am the program, or you are not a true fan. And that was bullshit and shouldn't have been said. And I'm sure it made him feel good in the moment. And I'm sure it made even people that were in that room in Assembly Hall, because you're all hopped up on the win and the speeches, it makes you feel good for a couple seconds. And then you realize what he said, and you realize that you've got fans of 80 years who have been supporting this program, who are not happy with what they've seen recently. They still contribute to NIL. And I'm going to tell an NIL story. They contribute to NIL. They buy tickets. They buy Peacock so they can watch games. They make sure that their cable carrier has Big Ten Network. They fly to the Bahamas for exhibition games. They go to New York to see us get waxed by UConn. They go to Atlanta to see us get waxed by Auburn. They go to Vegas by the thousands to see us get waxed by Arizona. And unless you unquestionably line up behind Woody, you're not a true fan. It was bullshit. It shouldn't have been said. It was offensive to so many people. And while I get having like an arrogance about you as the head coach of Indiana, that was not the time to do it. That was the time to try to bring everybody together. And that was a failure. And it really pissed me off, because I think that means you and I aren't true fans. I think that means you and I are not true fans, Ward. This thing that has connected you and I as friends for the better part of 25 years, this thing that you bonded with your father over for the better part of 40 years, me with mine and my mom, my brother, our friends, this thing that we have bonded with a community of people that love this program, that's not good enough to be a true fan in the sense that Woody thinks it's a true fan. I'm sorry. Woody's been good to us, and I think we've been good to them and supported them in every way we possibly could in a substantial way. I felt personally offended by it.
I what an idiotic thing to say.
I thought you were about to argue with me.
What a moronic thing to say. Like, if I cared enough to be offended, I might be. But like, I feel there's a guy who's insecure with the job he's doing because it's not very good. He's not doing a very good job with the job he's been entrusted to do. He's falling so far short of his own declared expectations to then grab the bully pulpit and to declare yourself dictator in chief, and like that the rest of us should be sent off to the gulag because we're not falling in line with the dear leader's mediocre results. It's like, no, I don't think so. I think anybody who's a true fan and had beef with how this season went isn't suddenly questioning whether or not they're a true fan because of what Coach Woodson said. I said, if anything, I think it makes us question even more if he's the right leader for this program.
I think all that is fair. And look, throughout this year, I don't want to say I've defended them, but I've pointed out the good things they have done. You just listed a bunch with the individual achievement of that. Yeah. Getting back to the tournament was an achievement. It's not good enough at Indiana. It is not good enough. It is not good enough that after 3 years, your record in the Big Ten is like 3 games over .500. Like, that's not good enough. I'm sorry. It's not good enough that your best year out of three in the Big Ten was 12-8. I mean, that's just not good enough. In 2 years where you were under 500 one year and 10-10 the 1 year, it's not good enough. It's not good enough to have zero recruits in a recruiting class.
And this is where we've all seen the style of play. And that's when you had everybody's All-American, truly one of the greatest to ever lace him up for the Hoosiers, and a damn good freshman point guard. We'd all say the best freshman point guard, certainly since Yogi, possibly going all the way back to Isaiah, that we didn't get out of the first weekend, right? And that
let me clarify real quick.
Yeah.
Yogi Ferrell was a better college basketball player overall because of the length of time. But what Yogi had to do his freshman year, and granted, he wasn't asked to do a lot his freshman year because we had Jordy and Cody and Vic and Christian Watford. You know, we had a squad.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I get that. Jordy Hulls. But what Jalen did his freshman year was remarkable. And he won us the game against Purdue. I mean, he won us the game against
all-time Purdue. Legendary performance.
Yeah. So it's really upsetting. It's really upsetting.
That nothing has been that impressive so far. Eking in to the NCAA tournament one time, needing to kind of get hot late in the season to more comfortably get in last year, only to have a disappointing finish against a hot Miami squad. But regardless, it wasn't like, oh my gosh, we all really felt that team last year was a viable Final Four threat. Like, should have been, I think, because of Trace and Jalen and some of the other surrounding talent. But I don't think any of us really believe, like, this is the team that's going to get us back to the mountaintop because of how they've been playing all year and the style of play from the year before that. And then we go through this really just, it was not a fun season to watch this team play basketball on mostly really either end of the court. Most of the time it was just like, this sucks watching this. And oh, guess what? Okay, it seems like today we're gonna have more of these guys coming back than we were a couple of weeks ago, but okay, coming back to a team we really didn't enjoy watch playing. And oh, by the way, we have exactly zero new players lined up to come in next year from high school, from prep schools, from the portal, from decommitments to other schools, with nobody, not one single person on planet Earth who isn't already in Bloomington is saying that they're coming to play in the fall. It's insane.
It is insane. I agree with that. I think it's crazy we don't have any recruits, because that's how you want to build a foundation for the future. Now, I will also say this. 2024 recruiting is not even like 2020 recruiting or 2019 recruiting. Because of the portal, because you can go get guys that have 2 years of eligibility left that have already played 2 years of college basketball, or 1 year that's played three, that you know exactly what their track record is, there is no doubt that there has been a de-emphasis on recruiting high school players, unless they think that there's something special about the kid, whether it's like, you know, a Braylon Mullins, who's a sharpshooter, or a Trent Sisley, who projects as a four-year kind of like Eric Anderson type player. Like, great, try to get those guys. But other than that, or a five-star who can come in like a Jalen Hood-Schifino and impact it right away, or a
Liam McNeely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But so I do think that it's not fair to just compare it to 2020. It's insane we have no recruits, but they made the strategic choice that we have to win next year, and the quickest way to ensure that we have a chance at winning is to go for portal guys that have multiple years of experience, or at least 1 year of experience, at the Division I college basketball level. Now, they are banking on getting Mackenzie Mbako and Malik Renu back. Already have Trey and Anthony coming back, and they're banking on getting Gabe back as a backup point guard. We have not heard announcements yet. Now, granted, we're shooting this on Saturday. A lot can change by the time that this airs on Tuesday. But right now, and also screw it, Ward, we could release this early.
Yeah. I mean, we could just drop it this afternoon because, you know.
Sure, might as well. It's our postmortem right now. So yeah. A lot can happen in the next week or two on guys announcing if they're going to put their names in the portal or stay. But with a core of Malik, McKenzie, and Trey, at least you have some stability from last year. And Gabe, who's a great locker room guy, and Anthony Leal, who's a great leader. So there is some stability. So is there a world where with these resources that we have, you go into the portal and you attract a stud point guard and a stud wing to replace the position you thought McNeely was going to be in? Yes, there is absolutely a world of that and a five-man rim protector so that Malik can continue to play the four, which is his preference. Yes, absolutely. The question is, do you have any faith that they're all going to come together and the whole will be greater than the sum of the parts? And our experience to this point just doesn't give us a lot of faith and belief that that is going to happen. Well, it may give you faith because faith is, you know, all about evidence not seen. So, but there's no reason to believe it. There's reason to be skeptical and worried. And when you look around college basketball, the teams that had like wholesale transfer portal, you know, retoolings of their rosters, they don't do well. Now, there's been a couple exceptions. St. John's has Rick Pitino, who is the second greatest coach in the history of the, well, of the last 50 years, maybe, behind Coach Knight.
I mean, yeah, but he's up there. He's up there.
He's a top five coach. He's a top five coach. And many would tell you that even right now, he's the best coach in college basketball. That's how he is respected by his peers. He had a team full of transfers, and they're on the bubble. They're on the bubble. Kansas State last year had a bunch of transfers and they had a magical run. But there are dozens of teams with tons of...
You can look for the exceptions to the rule, but as the dust...
I don't think we're going to get seven transfers. Like, I don't think that's going to be us.
As the dust is starting to settle on what does this new college basketball landscape look like, and you look at the teams who are doing well in the last two or three seasons and what that roster construction is, it ain't wholesale changes. Like, if you're laying odds on what teams are going to do well based on their roster construction, it's not ones that have enormous turnover from one season to the next. So it begs the question of, like, what is the strategy here? What is, like, it really feels like to me with how this season went and how the portal went last year, it's like, oh my gosh, now we have to approach this in a way where we are selling out, mortgaging anything down the road for the best possible chance to win next year. And to me, it's like, okay, but even in doing that, we're probably not going to be that good because of how many new players we need to bring in and what maybe I'm wrong. And it does look better now than it did 2 weeks ago, but it's like, okay, even if you slap these Band-Aids on and we're a tournament team next year in the, you know, top five of the Big Ten or so, and it's definitely better than this season, but like, but then what's the season after that look like? And the season after that, and it just does not feel like a program is being built. It feels like a bunch of people scrambling to save their jobs next season.
I think that's all fair, but I want to throw a couple caveats. I think if you get Mac and Malik back, and you've got Trey, you've got a pretty solid foundation to build around, and then you can get a point guard and a wing and a five man that you're not counting on to be like Khalil. You don't need a Khalil. I want to come back to Malik after this point. But I think what you're saying is all fair if, Ward, they only get transfers that have 1 year of eligibility left. If they're able to target guys that have 2 years of eligibility left, or even some that have three that are contributors next year, I do think it changes the calculus a little bit on what you're talking about the year after. Because look, we're in the world of college basketball where it works both ways. You can try to keep somebody and they may not want to stay. So if you can get a guy for 2 years that's a contributor for 2 years at the Big Ten level, at the national level, well, then you are building something. It's not building a four-year core like with Chaney and Graham and Bailey and Henderson and Evans. That's not what this is anymore. It's different. But if you fill the team next year with one-year guys, all the concerns you just laid out are 100% valid. If it's one-year guy and a couple two-year guys and maybe a three-year guy, it changes the calculus a little bit.
But you're still missing those foundational 3-4 year guys. You were gifted those when you showed up, and some of those guys are even coming back again next year for a fifth year. Like, you've been given a long runway of these foundational guys, and that definitely is running out next year. And I don't really know who are the guys that when everybody else shows up and they're like, hey guys, this is Indiana basketball. This is how we do it here.
Fair. I want to talk about Malik for a second, because I do think Malik in many ways is like the biggest key for next year. Because if they lose him, it's going to be a real problem. He has not made a decision yet. Hopefully that will come very soon. Now that the season is over, I think it will come very soon. But I have concerns about Malik, and you and I love Malik. Like, we love him personally. We love his family. He's been an NIL ambassador for us. We love him. He is a great kid. He wants it so bad. These last like 10, 12 games for Malik, where he's like fouled out in so many of them and had four fouls in so many others. And I don't know if you really watched him last night when he fouled out.
Oh, yeah.
I worry about Malik. I don't think physically there's anything wrong with Malik's game. Is he the most athletic guy in the world? No. Is he going to blow by somebody, you know, take him to the hole from the three-point line? No. Is he one of the most skilled offensive players in the post that we've seen in a long time? Yes. Great touch. Great footwork. Can finish with his right hand. His left is amazing. Extended his range out a little bit this year. Showed the ability to knock down a shot here and there. But if he does not get his emotions in check, where it does not override everything else, he is not going to be a successful basketball player for his life. And I worried about that. Like, he was so emotional last night. And part of me respects it because it means how bad he wants it. But part of the emotion stuff is also when he makes stupid fouls. Like, he'll miss a shot. And instead of just running back on defense, the emotion takes over and he's got to go over the back. If he makes a mistake on offense, he comes back on defense and reaches in when he shouldn't because he's trying to compensate. That's like emotional stuff that I really worry about Malik. And for this team to be good next year, regardless of who they get in the portal, Malik has to be a stud next year. And he's got to play 30 minutes a game. He can't play 30 minutes a game unless he can get that stuff under control. If he does get it under control, you're talking about an all-conference first-team type player. That's who
he
is.
For sure. Well,
so,
and look,
I worry about him a little.
Last year, I feel he had some pretty great examples with Trace and Race and Jalen. Honestly, all these guys who, and certainly Trace could get the crowd going, but they all were pretty even-keeled, cool-headed customers night in and night out, up and down the floor. What has been around Malik this year, you know, look. X is so over the top with every like
an emotional dude
bump or foul or anything. It's like good or bad. He's mercurial. I said that right?
Easy for you to say.
Easy for me to say. And then, you know, his head coach got thrown out last night. So it's like, what really, in terms of the second year of taking a leap in maturity and emotional maturity, I'm not sure he's had the best help, the best people, the best examples surrounding him this season when it comes to, dude, this is a part of your development as a player. It is purely mental, but you need to have guidance in that department too.
I totally agree. Which brings me to the last point, which is this team was not a connected team. Emotionally, spiritually, executionally from basketball, they were not connected. And we've heard stories that they were not connected off the court either. And that is another huge concern when you're going into the portal to bring in a bunch of guys that are mercenaries, basically, because you're using your resources to attract them. And I don't think you can win high-level college basketball without a team that is truly connected. And I don't know who that leader is. I mean, is it Anthony Leal? I mean, Anthony Leal's a good kid and a great leader, but it's tough to be a leader when you only play 15 minutes a game, 10 minutes a game. It really is. It's only so much you can do from the locker room and the bench. Who's the guy on the court? Trey Galloway is a great kid. But Trey Galloway is not a born leader like that on the court where he just rallies everybody and everybody looks to him to know what's next. And if they're on a run, if the team's on a 10-0 run, we're not going to let it be 17-0. You know, like, obviously he didn't play last night, but we didn't have that guy this year. And I don't know if that guy, I don't know if that guy's even on the roster. Could it be Gabe? Maybe, but I think they're going to try to recruit over Gabe and try to get a point guard that is a dynamic player to be what they thought X was going to be. We know that's what they're going for. So then Gabe becomes kind of a part-time spot minutes guy. I think it's really hard to be the on-the-court leader at that. So when they're going through this transfer portal, it's not just about the stats. They need a guy who can be the coach on the court. And off the court, we may have that in Anthony. We need a team that is more connected. And that's even harder in the era of NIL and transfer portal where guy and one and dones, where they're only there for 9 months and then gone. I hope Lykel McKenzie stays because we need him. And he did build as the year went on. And like you said, overcame some off the court stuff to have a great year, Big Ten freshman of the year. But the connectedness and the connectivity of this team and this program is not good right now. And that's an intangible that we'll just have to trust this coaching staff to realize it wasn't good this year and they got to change it for next year. And I hope as they go into this portal that they're targeting kids that they know are going to buy into a culture and a system and be and play for each other. You know, I think Michael Lewis told us this one time. You can have a good team if they do one of three things. They either play for each other, they have to play for the coach, or they have to play for the school. I don't think we had any one of those things this year in a universal way. And you hope you can get more than one of those. We need a couple of those next year. And that is my biggest concern as we retool this roster from what I think is a broken roster going forward.
Yeah, it's tough to say that these guys completely went away from each other when after the really just the shit sandwich of a season that it was, that they somehow like rallied together and won right. five in a row. Like that was shocking to me because I thought these guys were just all over it and most of them had one foot out the door. So it was surprising in a good way, confusing the way the team rallied at the end. And obviously, it didn't matter when we went up against a decent team in Nebraska. They were able to do that against five mediocre to bad teams or teams in a bad spot. And I think it is asking so much to find a leader, a point guard, a dynamic playmaker and facilitator who can come in off the street, meaning another program from somewhere else in the country and be like, guys, this is how we're doing this. Come in here. This is my team now. Like, I got this.
You're
like,
right.
it's asking so much. And it's like, yes,
you're right.
Ideally, that's what Gabe could be that guy. But to your point, if he just doesn't have the athleticism, the overall like talent to be the point guard that can really lead us back to Big Ten contention and, you know, second weekend type stuff in the NCAA tournament, at least as a sophomore, if nobody's really projecting him to be that next year, it's like, you're like, who is this magical man out there somewhere in college basketball who's going to decide to come to Indiana and be everything we need on and off the court to resurrect our program? Good luck finding that guy. I really hope he's out there and he wants to be a Hoosier.
Yeah, you're right. You make me feel worse about it. and I also want to point this out. Like, we're not saying this team hated each other. Like, that's not the case. There are definitely these guys like each other. But when you watch, I'm going to use this as an example. I've watched press conferences when Edie and Fletcher Lawyer and Braden Smith are talking, and you can just tell there is like this united front that these guys are going into war for each other. They stick up for each other. There just never felt like there was any of that juju on this team. And what we've heard behind the scenes is, yeah, that didn't exist. And we better find it, because if we don't, we're just going to be the island of misfit toys, bringing in transfer portal guys that have great stats that don't all fit together, and a team that's not playing for each other. And you're looking like another mediocre season when next year has to be the bar is so high next year. The bar is so high. And I look towards that. And I've said this when people have asked me, what would have to happen next year for you to think that this staff has turned it around? And I say they have to compete for a Big Ten championship and go to this and make a run in the NCAA tournament, which means second weekend. Like that's the bar next year. I truly believe that. And
I feel like that was the bar this year.
I don't think that was the bar this year, because we knew what we were losing in Trace and Jalen. We talked about this.
Yeah.
The bar was you have to at least make the NCAA tournament. The bar last year should have been compete for a Big Ten championship and make the second weekend, and they didn't. They underperformed where they should have been.
They did end up finishing top three in the Big Ten.
But they never competed for the title. They were never within striking distance. You got to come down in those last 2 weeks, and if a thing goes right, you know, that you have a real chance. That never was the case for us. We were several games back. You got to compete for it. So I do think that that's what I've been worried about this whole year, is that next year can't just be as good as last year. It has to be better than last year. And the chances of that happening are slim, but that's what they got to go for. I'm just sad overall. I do feel a sense of relief that this season is over, like you said at the top. This has been the hardest year. And I don't want to say hard. It's not hard. We're not the ones working at it. It's been the least fun year of being a fan that I can remember in a really long time. Part of that is because, of course, the play on the court, but part of it is the divisiveness that I think was caused in large part by the things said by the coaching staff, by Woody, that could have brought us together, but instead wedged us apart and created this just tension that exists. And look, I fell prey to it too. When the news came out about Liam McNeely, I heard pretty directly what people were saying, what the reason was. I went on Spaces and I was livid about it and was blaming us and blaming some of the fans that created that. And I was wrong to do that. I was emotional and upset, and I hate that I did that. And I apologize for that because I don't want to be that. But that's what I mean about it's been the most tense, least fun year of being a fan of Indiana in quite some time. The only thing that's kept me sane is I do find tremendous joy in the IU women's basketball program, the way Terry runs it, the people that are part of it, the foundational pieces that have grown within the program. They are the easiest team to root for, and that's what I'm going to focus on heading into tomorrow, their selection Sunday. I can't wait to fill out the bracket.
All I'll say in that regard is I don't think you should go anywhere near their tournament games. It's only half of us, so maybe they'd only get blown out by half as much, but that team is really a complete joy and wonder to behold when you and I are not in attendance.
A good, good point. Follow us on Twitter at Hoosier Hysterics for the hysterics. No E.
No I.
But the sometimes why.
Put Calbert in. Do we have Calbert doing it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, let's get Calbert in there. Let's feel good about it.
It already happened. They already heard him.
Oh, good. All right, Ward. Well, enjoy Greece. Oh, I'll see you tonight at the musical.
That's right. Sweeney Todd. Let's go.
My son, Sweeney Todd, in the musical, which also is where I watched the first 10 minutes of the game from a urinal at the bathroom outside the theater because I had, let's just say, a situation.
I hope you were taking care of that situation in a urinal. I hope you were in a stall.
Oh, yeah, not a urinal. Jesus. like the scene in Bridesmaids? The sink?
Yeah.
That was me last night. Jesus. Indiana basketball has rotted my brain. All right, man. Be good. Safe travels.
Bye.
From the halls of assembly, you'll hear us scream and shout. Our love of Indiana is manic and devout. Everything I do, we discuss in unique manner. We won't be satisfied until we hang another banner. Us two goofy guys go by names of Ward and Eric. And as you probably know by now, we're Hoosier Hysterics. Hoosier Hysterics. Hoosier Hysterics.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.